happy new year and welcome to Babs Buzz 2011. Can you believe it? I sure can't. Boy, where did the time go? This January 2011 was the most intense, and I mean intense, pitching month I've had in 2 years. I can't ever recall my phone ringing as much. I can't ever recall dialing as much. People were calling me on my cell phone while I was on my landline. People were emailing me and IMing me. It was insane. This is good news for everyone. So take heart. People are looking. It feels like, it appears like, I don't want to spit in the wind, but it feels like money is loosening up out there. Also, I'm getting some real attaboys from some indie producers out there who are going, yep, liking the scripts. So the subjects we're going to go over today are pretty straightforward and extremely basic. Today we're going to talk about log lines, surprises in scripts. I've got two books I want to talk about, and I want to talk about the Discovery Channel. So let's talk about the Discovery Channel first. You know, I was writing a novel, Full Moon Morning. You guys know that. And one of the things about Full Moon Morning that was challenging was the subject matter was so dark and horrific and emotional for me to work through the narrative that I very often found that I had to surface. And I would watch Seinfeld reruns, and, you know, I wrote The Art of Regifting while I was writing Full Moon Morning because The Art of Regifting gave me, you know, a dose of levity while I was trying to not get so depressed about the subject matter of Full Moon Morning, even though there was a joyful through line through Full Moon Morning. The horrific quality of the adventure was quite hard for this 10-year-old boy to go through. So I would occasionally... Now, I know this doesn't happen to you, but it happened to me. I would have writer's block. Now, what is writer's block? Well, writer's block, in my opinion, is when you try and force a square peg into a round hole. That is to say, you really don't know where you're going with something and you try to force it. What I learned over time was I would stop writing. This worked for me. I don't know if it will work for you. I teach it in my class, so I'm going to tell it to you. By the way, I have a class March 5th through the Learning Exchange. I'm teaching a basic screenwriter's class if you're in the Sacramento area. I know most of you are not, but if you are, come on in. You're going to have fun. I'm going to work you. Boy, will I work you. Okay, so I would watch the Discovery Channel, and lo and behold, watching these animals do what they do, and these birds do what they do, and these, I wouldn't watch the sharks eating the seals, that was too troubling, but I would watch these birds do this thing, and then these butterflies on moss, and these wrens fly in, and they'd fly synchronistically, and somehow, watching this sort of outside of myself, my house, my town, even my country, got me very, very loosened up to go back to writing. And my blocks lifted very quickly when I would go to the Discovery Channel, especially if I was hearing someone's voice, like, for example, Sigourney Weaver, or there's another who played Darth Vader. I can't recall his name, but you know who I'm talking about, James Earl Jones. Okay, so, you know, those voices, they're very and Morgan Freeman. I mean, gosh, who can't listen to Morgan Freeman? The guy's like, you know, chocolate mousse. His voice is wonderful. Okay, so that the Discovery Channel is one of the great ways that you can get when you're kind of bogged down. Now, everybody has their thing. Some people play racquetball. Some people go bowling. I'll never understand that, but I can't bowl to save my life. But some people really need a way to get outside themselves, and visual distractions help. And I don't mean movies. That's why I like the Discovery Channel. And I'm not talking about the History Channel. It's too much. There's just a little too much you got to process. But the great thing about Discovery Channel with animals is you're just watching this beauty kind of unfold before you. And that's another thing. In novels, you can get away with this a lot more than scripts, but you got to use five senses when you write. You have to have your characters reacting to taste and smell. And, you know, we talked about the smell, the fart acting, you know, that one with the, you know, that picture a while ago, Grandma's Boy, that the whole thing on the page, it reads very funny. And, so when people are reacting to smells, like if there's, you know, fire, smoke, you know, the actors are going to react to the smell and they're going to know right away that they're in danger. So you have to use your senses. And that's the great thing about the Discovery Channel, is that it allows you to do that. So having said that, which brings me to the next portion of that, writer's block, Ed gave me something. He's always giving me books and stuff to read. He's always going, kid, come here. You got to read this. Come here. You got to read this. So he gave me 101 Things I Learned in Film School. And this has been penned by Neil Landau and Matthew Frederick. And I got to tell you, it's so much fun. Dig deeper, page 64. Acting speaks louder than words. Let the action do the heavy lifting on the page. That's number 87. Some of the suggestions are really wonderful. Page 26 is my favorite. This is a quote by Billy Wilder. He said, quote, an actor entering through a door, you've got nothing. But if he enters through a window, you've got a situation. You see the difference there? Of course you do. You're writers. You know what's going on. 11, control the backstory. Your backstory can get away with you. We're going to talk about backstories, the second act, the B story, and log lines in a moment. I like the whole idea that Ed gave me this book for another reason. It drew my attention to things in scene that I might not have noticed. For example, items on set. So that was a lot of fun, too. One of the things you're going to do when you're writing is you're going to do a lot of rewriting. That's my hope anyway. It's a good idea to keep the frame in your mind. You write the movie that's in your head. Don't add a lot of crap. Just write the movie that's in your head. You can always go back and fix things, add things later. Avoid ing words. You know I always tell you that's really important. Keep it crisp. Keep your verbs nice and tight. Don't just say he nods, he glares. Show what his eyes are doing. His eyes darted back and forth. He caught something in that sentence. You know, catch something about someone's glance left or right, or the way they reach over to pick up a book and then they stop. Why are they stopping? Well, this, whatever you're seeing, it, set it up and make it really crisp and visual and intelligent, which brings me to log lines and save the cat. So, I'm going to ask you guys to send me your log lines. I've been looking at your pitches. Your pitches are okay. It's exciting that you're doing it. Thank you. Keep doing it. Some of them are really quite good. The scripts haven't taken off the way I'd hoped they would have. Ryan Lee sent me two scripts so far. Both of them are very good. They do need a little fleshing out a little bit, but not much. They're very market ready. He's actually taken quite well to the whole screenwriting thing. I'm really impressed, and I'm absolutely convinced that he's able to do that, mostly because that he reads constantly. That's all he does. The B story, if you notice in Save the Cat on page 80, it starts with one very telling sentence, and I'll read it to you. The B story gives us a breather. Now, this is huge. Why is that? Well, not only does it give us another little storyline that's going on, and in this case, it's the UPS guy in Legally Blonde, which you need to study this. This is so important. One of the things that happens in Legally Blonde is you get to know the main character, not just by what she says and what she does, but how she interacts with others. This is how you expose your character's flaws, strengths, weaknesses, habits, tics, through the B-line. The B-line could be really, all you have to do is fold the paper and send it flying. Because if you do it correctly, it could be almost as fun and almost as telling as your main storyline. And that's really what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to buoy the A storyline. The through line isn't as critical. And if you know your character's voice very well, then I can tell you that the through line will catch fire with the B story very quickly. Which brings us again back to Save the Cat, page 80. He talks about, adding a brand new bunch of characters. Now you have to be careful here because typically, there's a couple of rules of thumb. You have to have all your characters in by page 10, principals in by 15, secondary characters by 17. Just use your head. Obviously, if you're going to be talking about a guy who's trying to find a nuclear bomb, you're not going to cut to the second act and Mabel's pie-eating contest. So you've got to keep it relative and be very, very – you've got to be very sharp and very quick on your feet when it comes to editing. It's one of those things where your B story could get away from you. And I was dealing with that with one of my writers this week. And he's like, Barbara, I really know where the B story is going, but it's kind of taking a dump on the A story. Well, what that tells me is he doesn't know what he's talking about in terms of where he wanted to go with the film. So I told him, flip the coin. Turn the whole mess over, make your B story your A story and see what happens. So he's working on that now. This speaks also to the fun and games section. When Blake talks about the fun and games section, it's the promise of the premise. This is huge. This is where, guys and gals, that subtext speaks volumes. When it's not what you say, it's what you don't say. It's not how you act, it's your gestures. Directors are very sensitive to this kind of presence on a film. They know how to work this stuff. I give you the business of Verbal Kint trying to light his cigarette, right? He can't do it, can't do it. And finally, Agent Kulyan comes over and flicks the lighter and, you know, lights a cigarette for him. The foreshadowing of that, of course, as we all know who've seen it and just drooled over this film, is at the very end, he very, very flamboyantly opens the lighter and lights the cigarette. I mean, 2 minutes later, he would have been putting on lipstick. I mean, the guy was just flamboyant. There was nothing wrong with his hands or his feet. Duh. The promise of the premise, the foreshadowing of this guy, it was completely inverted. It's what magicians call misdirection. Love it, love it, love it. Didn't see it coming. Which speaks to surprises. I'll get to log lines in a minute. I'm working with a writer right now. He's very, very sweet. He's very sharp. His hooks are quite good. And I have to keep an eye on my time here. Michael's really good about prompting me. I'm sorry, kids. I only have so much time, so I'll try to get to everything today. The log lines, the hooks and the surprises in a script. Okay, so this writer of mine, he's wonderful. He's got these great hooks, and he really knows how to maximize them. His biggest challenge is that sometimes his drive will fall short. Now, when I first signed some of the writers that I have, many of them really were at the skill level where I was. Now, my skill level, happily, has jumped from 0 to 60. Some of the writers in my stable, that hasn't happened. So what do you do? Well, you go for outside help. Mike Cheetah is great at that. Jason Bortz is great at that. Richard Broadhurst is great at that. Find somebody you know and trust, people who have a reputation, or email me and I'll put you on the right track with people that I know and trust who are very skilled at getting scripts marketable, making them cool, making them sizzle. Give me surprises. I can't tell you. In fact, today I'm reading a script that's quite good. It's called Need for a King. It needs a polish. It's nothing that this particular writer can't handle, Gregory Houghton. It's a family affair. It's perfect for ABC Family, Dick Clark, Cartoon Network, all that stuff. It would be a cute little feature too, but I think it's more for television. In any event, the polish that he needs to do, he's very aware of it. He's got to do it. He's going to do it. But the surprises in the script, didn't really fire. And that was what I talked to him about. And he's like, oh yeah, I could do this and this. And I'm like, that would be surprising. That would be interesting. That would be cool. That I wouldn't see coming. You have to surprise your reader. Why? Because they read all day and you don't want to bore them to tears. I mean, come on, guys, gals, you know what this is about. This is about standing apart from the pack. This is about being sensational from jump. This is about having a table read and listening for things that don't work, listening for things that sizzle, and watching for the fireworks. I mean, gosh, if you know that a love scene between A and B isn't working, turn it into a fight scene in a restaurant. Better yet, they're upscale, classy, yuppie-esque. She throws a breadstick at him. He throws a breadstick back at her. She decides to up it. Once she takes an ice piece of ice, she throws it to him. Now it's getting good. This is a classy restaurant, yuppie. This is surprising. This is different. One of the things I thought that was so wonderful about French Kiss was that the director and the writers really encouraged Meg Ryan to kind of make a fool out of herself for love. This is a beautiful thing to watch on film because the comedy reward was great. Her delivery on many lines that were straightforward were much more rich and zesty. For example, she says to, I can't remember Kevin Kline's character's name. We'll call him Jacques for now. She says to him, she's sitting on the swing with him and the line on the page is fester period, fester period, fester period, rot period, rot period, rot period. So Meg Ryan, at the director's urging, she just, however he made her do this, she just says fester, 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 rot, rot. Right. Now, these are two very basic words, but the way she delivered them was quite intelligent. Why? Look at the setup. He's sitting there. Kevin's sitting next to her, and he's tapping his foot, and he's freaking out, and he's sweating. She just knows it. She feels him. She gets this guy. So the words, while brief, very, very telling. Same thing happens when she's sitting at dinner with Tim Hutton, who I really love acting-wise, but I could not stand his character in The French Kiss. I guess that was part of his job. When he says, oh, I feel bad. And she says, no, you shouldn't feel bad. And then she says, you know what? Feel bad. Get all pruny with it. Now, Think about that sentence for a minute. Get all pruny with it. Remember how you'd sit in the bathtub when you were little and you had your ducks and you had your soap and you're sitting there and you think you're king of the world and you look down at your fingers and you see this really pruny, like, and your mother would go, oh my gosh, you're turning into a prune. That's what she was talking about in that scene. It gave you a visual stamp right away of what she was talking about. And there's emotional import behind that. Now, of course, it's Meg Ryan. Duh. But the whole script was working. It was just, it fired at every corner, at every turn. And that's why, you guys, when you're writing a script, you should not try to do everything. What you need to do more than anything else. Yeah, you got a surprise. Yeah, you got a typewriter. But you have to tell a great, different story. And the story doesn't have to be epic to be great. I read a script called Once Upon the Moon. It's the story of my writer's interpretation of Hansel and Gretel. Blew me away. Sent it to a producer. She calls me up. She goes, this is terrific. I'm going to try and get this going. Now, she didn't write an option because she didn't want to tie it up. She was in love with it. I got a call from another producer this week. He read Lifelike. I love it. What do these two scripts have in common? I'm so glad you asked. What they have in common is the characters are well-crafted, intelligent, pages are crisp, not a lot of expository nonsense on the page. You're reading, 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 crisp, 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 and guess what you're doing? You're seeing a movie before your eyes. Why? Because the writer is telling you and showing you, more importantly, his vision of this particular story. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many great movies I've seen that haven't been made that are on paper. I told you about Greg Houghton. He's the one that I'm working with on Need for a King. He's the guy that got a half hour with me in a part of a contest, and he's just a talented writer. Guy's got two scripts. I'm telling you, if they go viral, forget it. They're going to be career makers for this kid. Why? Because they're both really, really great stories. So let's talk about, so to repeat, you've got to surprise the reader. Follow me home from the pizzeria, honey. Okay. I drive. My husband's behind me. I put my left signal on. I make a right turn. That's a surprise, right? My husband's like, my wife can't drive for crap, but you know what I mean, right? Okay. So we talked about the Discovery Channel. We talked about surprises in scripts. We talked about the book that I love, 101 Things I Learned in Film School. It's such a fun book. Let's talk about log lines. Verbs plus nouns plus irony equals log lines. Let me repeat that. It really bears repeating. Verbs, what are they? Action words. Plus nouns, person, place, a thing. Plus irony. Just think, what's her name from Jagged Little Pill? Equals log line. I'm going to read some log lines to you. Now, a couple of them are a little longer than I'd like, but you'll get the gist of it. The thing that makes a log line interesting. Now, do you know where log lines came from? I didn't know. I looked it up. Now, this is from Wikipedia, so if I'm wrong, sue me. When scripts were paper, they would stack them up in these bins at studios on the lot. So someone, I think, would take a magic marker, if I remember the story correctly, and someone would actually write what the movie was about on the spine of the paper of the script, you know, so you lay a bunch of scripts, you stack them up like pancakes, much like the cake I tried to make today, which Michael will tell you about sometime, which was terrible. And the log lines are there against these spines of these scripts. You'd see space, Jaws in Space or whatever, right? But you know, in the days where it was no PDF. So the goal was they could see very quickly where the script was going. Or get an idea of what the script might be about before they pulled it out of the stack. Okay, so I have a bunch of log lines here. I'm going to go over them with you. Dark spaces, a family, nouns, with a past riddled with marital missteps, verbs, attempts to move forward, verbs, but their own baggage, noun, and that of an unseen enemy, noun, drags them back for a reckoning, verb. Well, where's the irony? Well, here it is. I'm going to read it to you, and you're going to tell me the two words, but I'll tell you what they are. A family with a past riddled with marital missteps attempts to move forward, but their own baggage and that of an unseen enemy drags them back for reckoning. Well, they didn't set their baggage down now, did they? So they're really not outrunning anything. So the irony is they think they're moving forward, but they're carrying their personal grudges and their marital mess with them every step of the way. And don't think this demon doesn't know it either. And the script freaked me out. It's so good. It's got this sort of creepy, it's really good. Cheap to shoot too. So if anybody's listening out there, The Leash, perfect example. Moments away from a clean getaway, a small time criminal is captured and a C4 leash is put on his neck that won't come off until he completes 3 daring acts of crime. Well, the main irony about this is, and this actually could be written a little better. This is my fault. I should have put, just fresh out of jail, a former criminal, because that would have been more ironic. I think I'll make a mental note to fix that. Okay. Lizzie Strada, based in the name Lizzie Strada, when the girls were blogging back and forth on the internet in this movie, it was Lysistrata, the Greek story. Well, one of the girls went, Lizzie who? And she said, Lizzie Strada. She goes, no, not Lizzie Strada, Lysistrata. It's very funny. Anyway, Lizzie Strada, a homecoming queen and her geek protest mama join forces to rebel against the jocks and end up landing in the last place they wanted to be. Not a great log line, but close enough for jazz. Here's a decent one. Evicted, Peanut Butter Christmas, evicted and on the outs with the powers that be at work, a father has to follow his gut to find everything he needs, which happens to be right in front of him in a jar of peanut butter. That's good. That's good irony. Let's see what else we have here. Dream Man. After the murder of his father, one man's search for answers finds black ops after him to conceal their own misstep. But when they hunt him down in his dreams, he determines to become their worst nightmare. I like that. That's a good one. Tells you a lot about what's going on. So the point about this exercise is, and I want you to start sending me all your log lines. If I get, 100 or so really good log lines, I'll maybe have a little contest and name a winner. Don't make it your tagline. Like, for example, let me see if I can find Bell Ringer and I'll show you the difference. You guys send me a lot of taglines. Don't send me the tagline because the tagline doesn't tell me enough. I need to know what, here, this is a drama, okay? A federal agent mom is pulled back into the field to help her undercover spouse or lose everything. Now, the tagline for that particular picture is America the Beautiful Ellipsis Target. So it's America the Beautiful dot, dot, dot Target. That's the tagline. That's the, sort of the commercial. It's not the log line. There is a difference. The tagline is more like the blurb. It's more like what an actor might actually say. One of the terrorists could say, America the Beautiful, and another terrorist could look at him and go, Target. You saw that right there, didn't you? Of course you did. You're screenwriters. You got it. So what are we talking about here? Let's review. I don't know how much time I have left, but I'm having so much fun. I hope you are. I hope you're learning. I know I am. We talked about Discovery Channel, surprises and scripts. You should have at least 3 of them. We talked about the book Film School, log lines. Let's close with The Invisible Fence. There is an invisible fence out there. It's called writer calling a producer and the producer pushing him off. He uses the invisible fence. What is that? Oh, okay. Well, if you get your agent to send me your script, I'll read it. And then you guys call me and then I call the producer and the producer doesn't want to read it. He just said that because he wanted to be polite. That's called the invisible fence. Well, let me tell you about the invisible fence I get. You're going to be jumping for joy when you hear this. This went to Stephanie Courtney's manager. Now, Stephanie Courtney is famous, at least in my world. She is. I adore her. She's the progressive girl. She's hysterical. Hysterical. Sorry, she's hysterical. The writers are great. It's hysterical. Okay. I have a picture she should be starring in. It's a great vehicle for her. It will do for her what Pet Detective did for Jim Carrey. Okay. So I pitch her manager. Her manager's like, oh, yeah, thanks for thinking of us. I'll take this to her. Sure. I get an email back. Here comes my invisible fence. You listening? You listening? Here it comes. Who's funding it? Who's producing it? Who's directing it? Who's co-starring in it? Where are you going to distribute it? And I get 9 questions, none of which I can answer. Why? Number one, I'm an agent. I'm not allowed to produce. Number two, it's not my job to assemble that team. It's the producer's job, really. I mean, I'm sure there are agents who can do that. I'm not one of them. It's like there are people out there who are – I don't know what that frame is called that gathers all the pool balls, the billiard balls on the rack on the table, right? I don't rack them up. I can try, In fact, I do. I put feelers out to investors, doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. Hey, you want to take your girlfriend to the Oscars? Come on. Throw $50,000 down. You'll have a great time. You'll have dinner. So one of those things that happens to me, just like it happens to you, is the invisible fence. I'm here to tell you I got an answer for that. So what? You keep pressing. You keep plugging along, but you make sure your script is ready before you pitch it. I got a terrific little small picture pitched to me by a guy with a great concept and a great pitch. I said to him, are the following things in your script? And I named four items. And he said, oh, no, they are there. And I said, go fix them. Get coverage. Get back with me. He said, you know what? I will. I promise. One of those things should not stop you from doing many other things. Just because there's an invisible fence doesn't mean you can't. There's ways to go around it. I mean, you could invent like an invisible catapult and just put yourself right over it. Now, couldn't you? The point is you have to think, you have to use your head, but when someone says get your agent to do it and I call them and they say, oh, we were just being nice, don't be surprised because it happens to me all the time. But guys and gals, don't let it get you down. This month I had, let me tell you, this month was insane. I am so delighted to tell you that my phone is ringing, the faxes are going out, the emails are going out, the option offers are coming in. Some of them are kind of crummy, it's kind of a drag. But the truth of the matter is at least there's life in the body. You know, it's not stinking up the room yet. It hasn't assumed room temperature. So there's hope out there. And whenever there's hope, there's a chance. And whenever there's a chance, you got to chase the dream. And I don't want you to, you know, pull your balloon in, but I would like to fill that balloon that's got air in it. I'd like to fill it with data. You can still let it float. You just make it a magical balloon. Don't let those kinds of fences, don't let those kinds of stops make you put you in a position where you don't move forward. Okay, if you can't move forward, back up, make a left, make a right. Put your left turn signal on and make a right turn and surprise somebody. Hey, everybody, I can't thank you enough for letting me into your homes and into your lives. This is an absolute joy for me. It's humbling. It's instructional for me as it is for you. Keeps me honest, keeps me on my toes, keeps me learning. I hope it does the same thing for you. Remember, guys, you got to go out there. You got to try and tell your story. And even if you don't get sold, don't worry about it. Someone's always listening. Someone's always watching. Because in the end, what do you got to do? You got to live your life, right? So keep writing, rewriting, and go out there and once again, take on the world and live your life. Peace.